Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. My father was a blue-collar worker, basically, a construction worker, and he died on the job from his third heart attack in his bulldozer. And yet I grew up, he wasn't a union member, but he was a blue-collar worker. We grew up middle class, and yet I grew up viewing unions, many unions, as corrupt organizations. Now, why is that? Well, there's a new book out, Betrayal, How Union Bosses Shake Down Their Members and Corrupt American Politics, by Linda Chavez and Daniel Gray. And if you recall, Linda Chavez was President Bush's original choice for Secretary of Labor, and she's a former union official herself, and she took her name out of the nominee for Labor Secretary. I'd like to welcome Linda Chavez to Bob Enyart Live. Hello, Linda.
It's great to be with you, Bob.
Thank you so much. Linda, what a fascinating book, and I hope you will help me and the audience understand better what's going on with America's unions.
Well, first of all, this is not your father's labor movement. You talked earlier about your own dad being a blue-collar worker. So was mine. My dad was a house painter. I've actually belonged to unions. I've worked for labor unions. I worked for the American Federation of Teachers for almost a decade.
I was a teamster loading trucks in Denver for a while.
Okay, so yeah. We've all had union cards. The difference is that today, unions are made up more of people who work in the public sector, who are government workers. And the leadership of the labor movement has tilted very, very far left in the last 10 years or so. The president of the AFL-CIO, John Sweeney, who, by the way, is going to be one of the speakers next week in Boston at the Democratic Convention, he is a proud card-carrying member of the Democratic Socialists of America, the largest socialist organization in the U.S. He has been very critical of U.S. foreign policy. He was a bitter opponent of President Reagan's efforts in Central America to try to bring democracy and freedom to the people of Nicaragua. He has been very critical of the president in Iraq. And he is pushing an agenda that most union members, I think, frankly, would not approve of if they got a chance to vote on it, everything from abortion on demand to homosexual marriage to trying to keep the Boy Scouts out of the public schools.
Yeah, now, what are, Linda Chavez, what are these things, what do they have to do with representing the worker?
That is a very good question. That's the question we ask in our book. Why is it that union dues, which are supposed to promote better working conditions, higher pay, grievances, etc., that's, you know, what we think we're paying dues for if we are members of unions. But that's not what the way the money is being spent. It is being spent largely for politics. It's not a surprise that John Sweeney is at the Democratic Convention. Unions this year will spend $800 million trying to defeat President George W. Bush, and much of that money will come from union dues, again, without the members' permission, and in some cases, even without their knowledge.
$800 million, that's nearly $1 billion.
That is right.
Where do the unions get that kind of money? How much do they take in annually?
$17 billion in union dues. All of that is tax-free, which means that even if you're not a union member, you are subsidizing unions' activities because they don't have to pay taxes the way individuals and corporations do. They are tax-exempt. They are allowed to use those union dues to communicate with their own members on politics. But what I witnessed when I worked at the AFT and what I've been able to research and document in my book, Betrayal, is that they often don't just communicate with members. They set up phone banks and voter registration efforts and get out the vote drives, print up campaign literature that is aimed at the non-union public, and that is a violation of the law. That is illegal under our campaign finance laws.
Yeah, so they will use backdoor approaches. Maybe they'll have someone on the payroll of the union who's working virtually full-time in some liberals' campaign headquarters.
Absolutely. In fact, we will see it in John Kerry's campaign. I will bet the family farm that there will be union-paid personnel on the Kerry campaign. They'll be being paid for by union dues, and their duties in the campaign will be the same thing as everybody else's duties. It's just simply a way of illegally supporting the candidate. I can tell you, if Halliburton did that, if any major corporation did that for the Republicans, we'd read about it in the New York Times. It'd be all over the evening newscasts, and the people who were responsible would probably end up in jail. But
in,
it will not
major,
happen.
In a major corporation, if a small church, Denver Bible Church in Colorado, if as the pastor, if we used our funds, if we used $5,000 to in a political effort, it would probably be first page news if the Denver Post found out about it.
Well, of course, you remember what happened to the Christian Coalition. In fact, the Christian Coalition had its tax exempt status revoked because they printed up voter guides that were handed out to people at churches. They lost their tax status over that, at least temporarily. I think they eventually got it back, but they did temporarily lose the tax status. Now, let me tell you what happens with the NEA, the National Education Association, the largest union in America. They spend $90 million every year to hire 1,800 political operatives. They put them out in every congressional district in the country. They don't pay taxes on that, even though by law they are required to do so. But nobody is talking about taking away the IRS tax exemption from the NEA. Well, some people are. The Landmark Legal Foundation is trying to get that to happen, but we haven't seen anything happen in Washington.
How about the you mentioned that there's one union, just one local union, has launched a campaign to unseat President Bush, their own effort. What are they trying to raise?
All right, there's a local in New York City. It's called a Local 1199. It's hospital workers in New York City. They are going to spend $35 million to unseat President Bush. They're hiring 1,000 operatives to go into the campaign around the country. Not a penny of that will be spent in New York City, where the workers live and work.
Yeah.
It'll be spent in states like Colorado and other battleground states around the country.
So, what, of course, to justify their actions, the union leaders, who often pay themselves exorbitant fees, maybe we'll get to that in a moment, they would argue that this does affect their members' working conditions, because, of course, the government and the nature of the government affects all of us. But that's too indirect, and it's clearly a violation of the law.
Well, and that's the point. If they believe that, they have every right to raise money voluntarily from their members and support whomever they choose. And they spent about $90 million in 2000 supporting Democrats in voluntary money. That's fine. Let them do that. But don't take union dues that people have to pay as a condition of employment and funnel those monies into the campaign. And by the way, you'll hear from people saying, oh, it's not union dues they're spending. It's political action committee money. In fact, somebody from that local I just mentioned, 1199, called in when I was on a program in New York and said, oh, no, no, this is all PAC money. Well, I looked it up and got the records, and in fact, they're spending $35 million. They only have $400,000 in their PAC as the end of March. So they're coming up with that money through union dues. They are not spending it from voluntary contributions.
So what is it that the average union member puts in his dues in a year?
The average union dues in this country are about $600. It's more for the some unions, but that's about what it averages around the country. And of that money, we don't know how much of it goes to politics because it's very difficult. There's no transparency, very little disclosure of how unions spend their money. You can't really find out what they're spending it on.
Now, that $600, let's say you have a blue-collar worker, maybe a two-income family and with a couple kids, that's maybe a month or two of groceries.
Absolutely.
For
it
a household.
It might be the mortgage, you know. It might be your mortgage payment or your rent
or
payment.
Your rent. Maybe not mortgage in where we live in Colorado. Things are too expensive out here. But maybe your rent somewhere or groceries for a month or more. And so it's one thing for the union to honestly represent its members and take dues in order to accomplish that. It's a different thing altogether, and it's wrong to lie to the members about how the money is being used and to use it in an illegal way.
That is exactly right, and that is the point of the book. I'm not anti-union. I think unions have played an important role in the history of this country. They helped get rid of child labor laws. They helped improve conditions for workers in the workplace. I think they have, in many industries, largely outgrown their role, and American workers apparently believe the same thing because only about 8.2% of private sector workers belong to unions. But people should be able to join unions if they want, and they should have their dues going to the core purposes of the union: collective bargaining, grievances, administering the contract, setting up striker funds. That's what those members think their dues are going to, but then it turns out they're not. They're going to support, again, this very far-left social agenda. It is not the kind of thing that I think the average, particularly the average Christian union member, would want their money being spent on.
Yeah, that's obviously the case. Now, the numbers you just mentioned, the percentage of American workers today in unions, that's a lot different than in the past.
Absolutely. In the 1950s, at the apex of their of the labor movement, there were 35% of all workers were members of labor unions. Today, overall, it's 13% of workers, but in the private sector, it's only 8.2% of workers. And that's because most of the union's growth in recent years has been from government workers. And that's one of the reasons they're so tied to the Democratic Party, which is the party of big government. They have basically hitched their star to that wagon, their wagon to that star, I should say. And they are, you know, they're going to be there in force next week at the Democratic Convention. Probably, if the past is any guide, one out of every three Democratic Convention goers will be a member of a union or a union official. The NEA will have the largest contingent at that convention. And they're going to be basically holding the Democrats' feet to the fire to make sure that they keep, you know, funneling money out of American taxpayers' pockets and into the government.
Now, the NEA, you said they're the largest union in the country?
2.7 million members, that's right.
That's the National Education Association. And that union is somewhat typical of, you mentioned earlier, what does the average union worker, does he want a significant portion of his $600 a year going to fight for same-sex marriage, abortion on demand, all these issues not related to his immediate workplace? And the NEA does that only with their policies of promoting these radical left-wing anti-Christian values. They're not just funding campaigns. They're bringing it into the classroom.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they promote a very far-left agenda in the classroom. You may recall that after September 11th, the NEA got into a little bit of hot water because they put together a teacher's guide to have teachers teach about September 11th, and it was filled with anti-American diatribes, basically having us blame ourselves for having those hijackers fly planes into the buildings, talking about America in very derogatory terms. And they remind me of what former ambassador to the UN Jean Kirkpatrick called the Blame America First crowd. They think all of the ills in the world are the fault of America.
And, you know, it's one thing to look at your country, your city, your family, your church, and to notice the problems with it. You know, you might have an alcoholic father or uncle, and so you shouldn't overlook that, but you should still love your family.
Absolutely.
And love your community and love your country. And it's that's lacking with this left-wing agenda from the unions, is that there's an obvious hatred for America as a Judeo-Christian influence in the world.
Well, you're not even allowed to use that term with some liberals. They do not want to believe that we have a tradition in the United States that our founders actually believed in God and believed that they were not giving us rights. The government wasn't giving us rights. God gave us rights. And yet, if it were up to the NEA, the word God could never be even uttered in school. They've been certainly very, very involved in the effort to keep prayer out of the schools, to keep the mention of God out of the schools. They are very aggressively pushing, again, this very far-left social agenda. And yet, many teachers have no choice in being members of the NEA. If they want to get liability insurance to protect themselves against suits, if they want to get proper health care and health insurance, life insurance, they have to join the union. And some contracts, some states actually require that if you're going to teach, that you be a member of the union.
Well, Linda, and again, this is Linda Chavez, who is a co-author, author with Daniel Gray, of Betrayal, How Union Bosses Shake Down Their Members and Corrupt American Politics. Okay, so we have a declining percent of the American workforce unionized. Our church just got back from 3 weeks. At Denver Bible Church, we went to Europe for 3 weeks. And we did so to study the Bible and in some of the cities that the biblical events, history, took place. It was really great. But what we saw there was the difference in the standard of living in between Europe and America is startling.
Yes.
Just startling. And we looked into that and we're curious. And one reason, obviously, is that when you look at the hours Americans work, we work, at least this is the statistic we came up with, on average 6 weeks longer per year than Europeans.
Well, that's true. They get a lot of vacation. They work fewer hours a week. But, you know, it's very interesting that you say that about the difference in the standard of living. This is something many Americans who don't travel don't realize. If you look at the average American home or the average American apartment, it's a lot bigger than what people have in Europe. They have more expendable income here in the United States.
It's air-conditioned.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, I used to work at the United Nations. President Bush had me appointed as the representative to the United Nations Human Rights Subcommission, and I spent every summer in Geneva, Switzerland. You know, people don't think of Switzerland, think it's cool. I can tell you it was always over 90 degrees, and nobody had air conditioning. You lived in tiny, tiny apartments. I lived in a little two-room apartment. I don't think there was more than 300 feet. I paid, you won't believe this, $3,000 a month, dollars, for that apartment.
Oh, my. Linda, when we got there, they had some ice cubes. By the time we left, they were out of ice cubes. I mean, it's funny that we hear about the Brits like to drink their beer warm. Europeans, they go for fresh food. They buy their food every day.
Because they can't refrigerate it.
Yeah, they don't go for fast foods. Right. It's because they can't afford ice. They can't afford large freezers and refrigerators. And they can't afford restaurants.
And, Bob, I'll tell you how that's relevant to our discussion about unions. Labor, the Labor Party is the party of the left in Europe. And it has been responsible for crippling industries, crippling the economy in places like France and now in Germany and in England as well. And that is what John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, would like to bring to America.
Exactly.
He is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. He believes in socialism. He'd like to turn the Democratic Party into the Labor Party. And, in fact, Democratic Party is the Labor Party in everything but name.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of an economy, you know, I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and because I've been persuaded that the Bible is the Word of God, I view everything from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And the Bible teaches that we should serve one another. And in all the books I've read on economics, I've never seen a better definition for the economy. What is an economy? The economy is when we serve one another. And in America, our Judeo-Christian ethic has taught us that it's a good thing, it's a godly thing to work hard and to serve one another. And when we prosper, it's good. Whereas on the left, they look at the socialized medicine in Canada and Europe and they praise it when it's just a shadow of the great health care that we have in America.
Well, that is exactly right. And, of course, the difference is if you believe in those Christian values, if you're an employer, it also means you treat your workers right. You
right.
pay them a fair wage for their skills. You do not try to beat them out of a decent living in order to line your own pockets. That's one of the reasons I think you've seen a decline in labor union membership in the private sector is I think American corporations have learned that. We live in a society that's highly competitive. Companies are actually competing for workers, for the best workers, and so they're not likely to abuse their workers because they know that the person can just pick up and go elsewhere where somebody will treat him more fairly. So, you know, we really need to promote these values on both sides. Again, I'm not opposed to the idea if people want to bargain collectively, if they want to join unions, that's fine, but it ought to be voluntary, and they ought to have some say in how their money is spent.
Linda, you mentioned that now the second time, that you're not opposed to unions, and neither am I, but can we talk for just a moment on the principle behind the idea of organized labor and see how do you fix what's wrong in America? It seems to me that in principle, there's nothing wrong with coworkers saying, if we band together, we're a greater value to our employer. So let's do that and let's try to negotiate better pay and working conditions for ourselves. That's great. Where does it go wrong? I have a very specific idea about where it goes wrong.
Well, some of the way it goes wrong is as long as it's voluntary, as long as you don't force anybody to join a union, and as long as you sit down and you bargain with your employers in good faith, and you don't treat the person as the enemy, but as a partner in an enterprise in which you can both benefit, I think that that is, you know, that's the way to proceed. Unfortunately, unions often preach class warfare and treat
right.
the employer as the enemy.
But there's nothing you can do really with the human condition in that no matter what we do, there will always be envy and bitterness.
Right.
So the question is, what is the government doing that's feeding into this organized labor corruption?
Well, go ahead and tell me what you think.
Well, it seems to me that to fix it, you need to level the playing field. As it is right now, the unions, thanks to endless government regulations, the unions have advantages over employers when they're negotiating. And that should end. It should be purely a private affair, private enterprise, when businesses and unions when they negotiate for contracts, the government should have no say in what's happening whatsoever. The government only gets involved if somebody's violating a contract. If the business owner is violating his contract with the employer, with the employees, well, then you take it to a judge. But when you're deciding what are we going to pay, what kind of benefits, the government shouldn't be there coming to the aid and defense of the unions, telling the businesses how they must negotiate, how they have to treat their unions, how they can't fire union members. It should be strictly a private affair.
Well, and in fact, my co-author and I actually write about what we call the legal apartheid that exists in the United States, with one set of laws that apply to everybody and another set of laws that apply to unions.
Right.
And that is part of the problem, is that they have protections. Many of these laws date back to the 1930s. They were written during the Great Depression. They were written at a time when corporations didn't always behave honorably. And they were written at a time when there wasn't so much access to information, and people didn't really always know what was going on. We have so much access to information these days that it's a very different world. So you're absolutely right. We do need, we basically need to treat unions like all other organizations. We need to say that if you're going to have a union and you want people to be in this union voluntarily, then they should have final say about how their money is spent, and surely those 40% of union member households that vote Republican should not have 100% of all the union dues money going into politics going to Democrats. In fact, I'd like to see unions not be allowed to spend money except voluntary money on politics. That way they become just like every other organization.
I actually think when we look at who can do what regarding political speech, I think we need to completely revamp what we're doing in America. I think we have a lot of injustice in the system. For example, as the pastor of Denver Bible Church, I'm not allowed to say in my role as the pastor, don't vote for John Kerry because he supports the unjust killing of unborn children. And why should I be gagged? Why should Christians and Christians who devote their lives to trying to help Americans, why should we be taken out of America's political life? It's fundamentally, and the problem is deeper than that, but that shows us we've got a fundamental problem with our system.
Well, we do have a fundamental problem, and I will tell you, Bob, that at least with respect to the way those laws are enforced, if you were the head of some, what do they call them, metropolitan
community
churches.
Church?
These are the gay and lesbian
yeah.
churches
oh,
around
yeah.
the country. And you got up and said you can't vote for George W. Bush because he's anti-gay. I don't think anybody would knock on your door
no.
and take away your tax exemption.
Right. How about Jesse Jackson, Rainbow Push?
Right.
Going
the
into
Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, into 100 major.
The Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You know, having political rallies in the largest black churches in America. It's been going on for decades. And so, of course, there is a double standard.
Well, when they passed the collection plate back when Jesse Jackson was running for president, they would literally, in churches, pass the collection plate and they'd say, put a Jackson in for Jackson, a $20 bill in for Jackson. That money was unregulated, uncounted. Who knows what happened to it? It may not even have been spent on the campaign. It could have ended up in people's pockets.
Right, exactly. So, Linda, now we know why your political opponents wanted to keep you from being the labor secretary.
That is, I think, absolutely true. And as you may recall, I did step aside because a decade before I had been nominated, I took a battered woman into my house. She had been being very badly abused by her husband, had fled Guatemala, ended up in a shelter in Washington, D.C., and a friend asked her into the house, and I did. She happened to be in the country illegally, and because of all of the hullabaloo around that, I thought it was a distraction to the president, so I stepped aside. There's no doubt that the Republican Party, I would have well represented the president.
Mm. Well, boy, the unions would have had the living daylights scared out of them if you actually had been approved. We wish you were there, Linda, but since you're not, we're glad that you're a columnist and a Fox News political analyst and that you've written another book. Your earlier books were great, An Unlikely Conservative and Out of the Barrio. And so now this latest book by Linda Chavez, Betrayal, How Union Bosses Shake Down Their Members and Corrupt American Politics. Linda, thank you so much.
And thank you. And let me just get my website quickly, www.lindachavez.org. You can read excerpts there online.
Lindachavez.org. We've got it. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Having Linda on Bob and Yurt Live, she was on about a year ago. Did we have her on with Unlikely Conservative? Was that it? I get these book titles confused. But what an interesting conversation with Linda and the truth about unions. And so is there anything fundamentally immoral about organized labor? No, of course not. But just level the playing field and don't let the government come down in negotiations on the side of unions. And then you'll see how unions are cleaned up. It's pretty neat how that would happen as compared to today. All right. Hey, if you're interested in Bob and Yurt Live, the show, well, you might want to call and get a copy of our catalog. You can call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or you could go online at KGov. Our website is KGov, KGOV.com. And we've got so many materials to teach through the Bible, beginning with the plot, an overview of the whole Bible. And you could either read it, the plot, or get it on an MP3 CD and listen to about 5-6 hours of Bible teaching. Get an overview of the Bible, and then as you proceed to study it more, the pieces will fall into place. This is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.